Welcome to Musically Challenged, your weekly helping of random music conversations based on whatever topic the guys choose. Their goal is to entertain and inform you on a variety of themes. This podcast is an expression of their lifelong love and commitment to music. Simply stated, music is life. This show may include adult themes and language. Once again, welcome to Musically Challenged. Here are your hosts, Chad and Lou.
Welcome to episode 37 of Musically Challenged, your weekly helping of random music conversations based on pretty much whatever topic we want. I'm your host, Chad. Let me lay you down, knight. And alongside me is Lou. He stopped loving her today, Schwalbach.
I feel a little dirty with your nickname there.
This week we are, if you haven't figured it out yet, rewinding the clock and talking classic country music. This is a topic near and dear to my heart. If you've listened to any of our shows up until now, you know that I grew up in a classic country household. What qualifies as classic country song to us? That's a great question. Lou and I went back and forth to determine what we would consider to be classic, and here's what our very basic criteria will be. Any country song written and released before 1985. Why 1985? That was about the time country music started to change. It became less twangy and more rock and roll based. Though I personally have nothing against that, it's not true country music anymore. It slowly became 1980s rock and roll. So sit back, grab a cold beer, and pull your dog and your wife close as we find out if we are truly musically challenged.
You know, I think that's the first time in all of our episodes that we've actually asked that question at the beginning of every episode.
What's that?
If we are musically challenged or not.
I think they know we are.
I'm aware of that, but at the same time, I think that with you actually physically saying that, this is the first time you've actually asked that.
I think you might be right. So, well, you know, we do a lot of random things here because that's the way we roll. You know, it's just one of those things. But let's start this week with a beer tasting.
Sounds like a plan to me.
I know we did this once before, but Lou has once again graced us with some nice cold beer here. This is Wells Sticky Toffee Pudding Ale. It's 5% alcohol by volume, and
they're not even 12-ounce bottles.
No.
It's 11.2.
Yeah, it's 11.2.
Bastards.
It's got a smell. You can definitely smell the toffee.
It's got like a caramely type.
Yeah, like a caramel, like a sweet smell to it.
Like a Heath bar.
Yeah, kind of. Which makes sense. It's
I would hope so.
But
it's the same one that they made a banana bread. The same.
Ooh, that sounds interesting, too.
It is unique. Fortunately, it doesn't taste as much banana because fake banana is pretty horrible.
Yeah.
I tried it at my sister's place, and it was decent. I wouldn't go out and buy a ton of it, but it was worth trying.
Well, you know, my daughters always tell me that beer smells like rotten bread. So the fact that they made a bread beer, I guess
it's very meta, isn't it?
It is. Well, let's give this here a pull and see what we got here.
No clanks? All right.
Oh, I like that. It is bitter, but it's sweet at the same time.
It's got a real good back end.
It does. It kind of sits on your palate, and it's almost sweet like a toffee.
Listen to us talk like we know what we're talking about. No, it does have a real good back end to it. You're right. It does come off as a bit bitter, but actually letting it kind of ferment on your tongue, per se, I like it. I would definitely drink this.
I would, too. I'd say if you like different beers, if you're into trying something new, go out, try Wells Sticky Toffee Pudding Ale Beer. And we are not paid endorsers. However, if Wells wants to reach out to us and pay us to say stuff about their beer, I'll even drink more of it.
You know, I will be more than happy to taste test their new flavors. I will fall on that sword.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, for the show.
Oh, for the show, of course.
Yeah.
For scientific purposes.
Exactly. All right, so we've started with
trivia.
Trivia question. Why can I never come up with the word trivia?
I don't know. You're better at knowing the answers than actually saying the word.
I know. So let's do this week's trivia question before we get started.
All right. Trivia question for today. Willie Nelson has used the same guitar since 1969, and the guitar has a name. What did he name his guitar?
Ooh, that's a good one. I have an idea. But we'll end of the episode.
Keep it till the end.
All right, so you want to kick this one off, I think?
Yeah, I can. All right, so just a little bit of a heads up on this one. Chad chose all the songs for this one.
I did.
Because he's more of a country, classic country guy. Next one is going to be modern, and that one I chose, so you're
and
welcome ahead of time.
I will tell you, he actually did a pretty good job. I've seen the list, and I can't really put many holes in it.
I appreciate that. Now, I have to say, first off, I didn't really grow up in the country household as you did.
Right.
I grew up in a classic and Southern rock household that was, so this is definitely out of my wheelhouse. I mean, I'll be the first to admit this.
But you were willing to sit down, listen to the songs,
absolutely,
and do the episode.
Exactly.
Which is all I can ask for. Even if you don't like the music, it's all I can ask for.
Well, and you know, here's the thing. I have a feeling that there's going to be episodes I'm going to ask you about, and you're going to roll your eyes and go, what? But you'll still do it because we're friends.
We're friends, and what the hell? It's music I haven't listened to before.
Exactly. Now, I would have to disagree that country music became 80s rock. Mainly because 80s rock was hair metal, or new wave, and also, sure, they added more rock stylings to it, such as heavier guitar and drum work, but it still pretty much held true to what country music is made of, and that's just straight-up country music. That is my two cents on this one.
Fair enough. I will sit in silence over here and disagree with you.
All right, perfectly fine. Now, continuing, my first song we're going to do is Mel McDaniel, Louisiana Saturday Night. Melvin Mel McDaniel was a classic country artist from Oklahoma. Like most of them are. He grew up in Okmulgee? Sure. And was inspired to play music by seeing Elvis on TV. At age 14, he taught himself how to play guitar and made his official debut at age 15 at the high school talent contest. Performed in Tulsa for a while, then tried Nashville unsuccessfully. So he went to Anchorage and worked on the oil fields. If you can't do one thing, go completely 100% opposite of what you're trying.
Right, right.
And got a fair amount of success in that. Finally, he gave Nashville a try again and finally hit it, signing with a major label, and I guess singing with them too. This song was the first big success that he had. Let's take a quick listen.
When the kin folk leave and the kids get fed, me and my woman gonna slip off to bed. Have a little fun when we turn out the lights, Louisiana Saturday night. Well, you get down the fiddle and you get down the bow. Kick off your shoes and you throw them on the floor. Dance in the kitchen till the morning light, Louisiana Saturday night.
Now, he entered the Grand Ole Opry in January of 86, performing there often. In 96, he had to fall into an orchestra pit at a concert that nearly killed him.
Ouch!
Which pretty much ended his touring prospects. He never truly recovered. He had a heart attack and lung cancer and passed away at age 68 in 2011. Louisiana Saturday Night, it's more of a rock beat than I'd expect from a classic country song, classic finger quotes. However, the song's about being out in the country, in this case, the Louisiana backwoods. Pretty much the definition of a redneck based on this song.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's one of those songs, yes, it's got more gumption, more beat to it than a lot of classic country songs. But it kind of was in that rockabilly slash bluegrass feel almost.
I think that's a great term, rockabilly, because I know that's going to get thrown around a bunch.
Especially in modern country.
Right,
We'll talk about rockabilly a lot. But, you know, this is a great song. It's just simply talking about family and friends getting together to play some music and dance and play. This reminds me of when I was a kid, actually. We would all get together at my aunt's house, and she'd pull out a guitar. My mom had a guitar. My uncle played a guitar, and I had a cousin that played the fiddle or the violin. And we would sit there and we'd sing gospel music and old country music. And it was just, I mean, it was a party atmosphere, you know, but it was just family and sitting around and doing it. It was something honestly, I'll never forget it. It's part of the family.
That's really cool. And you know, music always brings great memories for things. I mean, I'm sure that we could make an entire episode of songs that just have memories that have nothing to do with the song, but it was playing at the time something happened.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, easy. And that's great. I mean, my memories would be mainly of having my dad and his Harley friends over, and they would crank the stereo, put a whole bunch of like Skinner and ZZ and all that other stuff
right
on. They wouldn't sing along to it. They would just drink and send me for beers occasionally. But it was
go
still
to the store. We're out of beer.
No, go in the house and grab one. More like that. No, Wausau was liberal back then, but it wasn't quite that liberal to let me as a kid go buy beer. Smokes, on the other hand, the gas station knew us, so it was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Nowadays, Christ, you need to have an ID just to buy sugar soda anymore.
Yeah, just about.
But no, it's a great song. I enjoy it as far as for the classic. Again, because it has a little bit more of a beat and less of a twang to it, is probably why I was able to appreciate it better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it would have been more of the twangy stuff, it's a little bit more difficult for me.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, so that's how I feel about Mel McDaniel. And what do you got for us?
All right, so my first one I'm going to go with, I think, the oldest song on the list, Big Bad John by Jimmy Dean. The King of Sausage, Jimmy Dean.
Is that same guy?
He is the same guy.
I was wondering about that.
He is the guy who brought us Jimmy Dean sausage. He gave us Big Bad John. It's a country song he wrote and composed in collaboration with Roy Acuff, which, if you know country music, classic country music, Roy Acuff was one of the old cowboy country singers. So this was released in September 1961, by the beginning of November, it went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and won Dean the 1962 Grammy Award for Best Country and Western Recording. This song tells the story of a mysterious and quiet miner who earned the nickname Big John because of his height, weight, and muscular physique. Because he stood 6 foot six and weighed 245.
I remember back in the day when I weighed 245 in middle school.
He supposedly came from New Orleans, where he allegedly killed a man over a Cajun queen. So let's hear about Big Bad John.
Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land, Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
So one day, a support timber cracked at the mine where John worked. The situation looked hopeless until John grabbed a sag and timber, gave out a groan, and like a giant oak tree, just stood there alone. Then gave a mighty shove, opening up a passage and allowing 20 other miners to escape the mine. Just as the other miners were about to re-enter the mine with the tools necessary to save him, the mine fully collapsed, and John was believed to have died in the depths of the mine. The mine itself was never reopened, but a marble stand was placed in front of it with the words, "At the bottom of this mine lies one hell of a man, Big John." Now, believe it or not, some versions of the song changed the last line to "lies a big, big man" to replace what was at the time considered to be borderline profane language.
I can buy that mainly because of a modern country song that we'll talk about later.
Okay, so this is one of those songs. It's just one of those songs that, in the very vein of classic country, you know, the storytelling songs.
Yep.
And this is exactly what this does. It tells a story. It tells you exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no guessing. You know, they tell you he killed a man over a Cajun queen. Now, whether or not that's a girl or a boy, I suppose, I'm guessing at the time a Cajun queen was like a voodoo lady or something like that.
Or a riverboat gambler.
Could be. But anyway, so, you know, I just really enjoy this song. And I don't know, what were your thoughts on this song?
You know, first of all, I got to check on the years, because I could have sworn that one of the later ones, a Hank Sr. song, came out a little bit before that. But we'll talk about
that. Oh, that's possible. Yeah, that's quite possible.
Hank Sr. was in the 40s, wasn't he?
40s and early 50s. Yeah, so he probably, yeah.
But this is one of the oldest.
Yes,
you can easily go with that one. Now, for the song, I mean, cool work on the sausage, Jude. Jimmy Dean breakfast sausage?
Yeah.
Pretty second to none, almost.
Yeah, I really like Jimmy Dean, especially their sage. And I know food now, but their sage breakfast sausage?
It's just amazing.
Oh.
Anyways, yes, you're right. It is another storytelling song. He tells the story of a behemoth of a man who was a miner, an adult, so not a minor miner, but an adult.
He was a coal miner.
There you go. Who saved his coworkers. Tell you what, Big Bad John sounded like he could kick Big Bad Bad Leroy Brown's ass any day.
Yeah, I would think so.
In a heartbeat. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and pick the next one up here with Loretta Lynn, the Coal Miner's Daughters.
Hold on. What did you think? Was Big Bad John a good song or a bad song?
I guess I never really said that. No, it was a good song. I like the fact that as the miner, or as it was a song about a miner, it actually had like the tinking that sounded like somebody with a pickaxe kind of tapping at the walls.
Yep.
It was a decent song. I like the storytelling aspect. It reminded me a lot of like John Henry.
Right.
I can't say that this would make my playlist of best songs I've ever listened to. I probably wouldn't skip it, so it was okay.
Okay.
That's about the best I got on that one.
That's fair enough. All right, so move on to your next one.
All right, so I'm going to go with Loretta Lynn. We had Coal Miner's Daughter, Sticking with the Mines.
All right.
Now, Loretta Lynn was one of the leading ladies of classic country. I mean, you can't really argue that.
No, she was. I think there was some sort of nickname for her, like maybe it was just the Coal Miner's Daughter, but she had this, like, almost regal name that they would call her with country music. So and I can't think of it right now, but
and if any of you can think of it, let us know. Now, she got her first guitar in 1953 and taught herself how to play. About 3 years later, she started her own band, Loretta and the Trailblazers, with her brother Jay Lee on lead guitar, and cut her own record in 1960. She busted onto the country music scene in Nashville in the mid-1960s, her music focusing on blue-collar issues and themes such as Coal Miner's Daughter. Country radio apparently banned 9 of her songs. I'm not sure quite why. She was well known not just for her own work, but also for teaming up with Conway Twitty a lot, together releasing many number ones through 71 through 75, and then wrote a best-selling autobiography in the mid-70s titled Coal Miner's Daughter that was made into an Oscar-winning movie in the 80s. Let's take a quick listen to the song.
Yeah!
Now, she continued to tour, record, and release music, and is still active today. Lynn has had to put her recording and performances on a bit of a delay due to having a stroke in May of this year, but she is expected to make a full recovery per her website, and released her most recent album, Wouldn't It Be Great, or will be releasing it sometime in 2018.
Okay.
Which, surprisingly enough, is a lot closer than it sounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're recording this in October.
Right.
So... Actually, I think they'll hear this in October.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, now the song, it tells a story, just like a lot of the classic country does, about life as a coal miner's daughter, which was actually autobiographical. Her dad really was a coal miner and a farmer, which I didn't know. The song itself was pretty much country standard. You know, there's no one who sings any country who does country covers that will not sing and be familiar with the song.
Oh, yeah.
As far as a good song, this is one of those twangy songs. Not a huge fan. She's got a good voice. I like the accompaniment, just not my style. Didn't really care for it, to be quite honest.
You know, Loretta Lynn, this is her perennial song of growing up in, of course, Butcher Holler, which I'm not sure if that's in West Virginia, but it's in one of the coals. You know,
it was supposed to be West Virginia.
I think it is too, but I didn't have the time, and I was going off of memory as far as where that's located, but I think you're right. Her daddy was a coal miner. She talks about how he struggled to give them what they needed. He worked in the coal mines at night and then worked in the cornfields during the day. It's a song of love and necessity. It's just good classic country music. I love this song. I love a lot of Loretta Lynn stuff. Her work with Conway Twitty, like you said, is, you know, great. I enjoy their stuff. I enjoy Conway Twitty. So, you know, it's just one of those songs where you don't look at this song and you go, ugh. It's another Loretta Lynn song. You just don't do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That is her song. That is the song that made her what she is today.
Right, right.
So I'm going to jump now to Charlie Rich. And funny story with this, before I get into the song, when I was a kid, I don't know why, but I had in my mind that Charlie Rich was black. He's not.
The name sounds like it could be.
Possibly, but for some reason I always had that in my head. And then when I was somewhere, probably in my early 20s, I saw him a picture of him because he was doing a concert somewhere at one of the casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he's white? And then I thought, well, was I thinking Charlie Pride as a kid? Because Charlie Pride is black.
Right, right, right.
But anyway, just a little side story here. So the Most Beautiful Girl, subtitled Have You Seen the Most Beautiful Girl in the World? Is a song recorded by Charlie Rich and written by Bill Sherrill, Norris Wilson, and Rory Burke. The country and western ballad reached number one in the United States in 1973 on three Billboard music charts. The song receives a very brief airing by Brenda Fricker in the film So I Married an Axe Murderer. Also, Jason Alexander offered a rendition as his character George Costanza in the December 16th, 1992 episode of the sitcom Seinfeld titled The Pick, where he bemoaned the loss of his girlfriend, Susan. Well, let's hear about this magnificent girl.
Hey, if you happen to see the most beautiful girl that walked out on me, tell her I'm sorry. Tell her I need my baby. Don't you tell her that I love her.
So Charles Allen Rich was an American country music singer, songwriter, and musician. His eclectic style of music was often difficult to classify, encompassing the rockabilly, jazz, blues, country, soul, and gospel genres. In the later part of his life, Rich acquired the nickname the Silver Fox. He is perhaps best remembered for a pair of his 1973 hits, Behind Closed Doors and The Most Beautiful Girl. So, you know, The Most Beautiful Girl, I think this is like a great love song. You know, he's talking about, well, actually, he's talking about the loss of the most beautiful girl.
I was going to say, I'm not sure.
But it's a love song. He's pouring out his heart that, you know, he lost her, and now he wants her back.
Right. I mean, I get that. I mean, not really one I would put on my love song CD.
No, this isn't one you want to put on a mixtape for your girlfriend.
This is one where you're crying into your beer about.
Yes, absolutely. But I still, to me, it still rings as a love song.
Oh, yeah. I'll agree with that.
You know, but you're right. It's not something you put on your mixtape for your girlfriend because she's going to be like,
Wait, who's the other one you're talking about? I didn't go anywhere.
So what are your thoughts on The Most Beautiful Girl?
It's another song about a girl, a standard trope of country music. Can't argue that one.
No.
And you mentioned the So I Married an Axe Murderer, which is a great movie, by the way.
It's all right.
It's a cult classic.
It is. And it's Mike Myers.
Right. It's so, Mike Myers before he went bad. And that was the first thing that I thought of was his mom singing as he's walking in the door and then his dad telling him to shut it because the soccer game's on. So it's a good song. You're right. It's a love song. I don't do love songs really unless I have to.
So you don't do love songs unless your wife's mad at you?
Not even then.
No?
No. Because usually I don't get that far in the doghouse that I have to do that.
Okay. Fair enough.
But it's all right.
Okay. We'll give that an all right. I'm keeping tally of the ones you like, dislike, and all rights. And in the end, we're going to see how much country you actually like.
Well, considering that I came up with all the classic or the modern country ones, it's probably more than you're going to think.
It is, because I was actually surprised when you volunteered to do that.
Well, we had to throw the modern in there. We couldn't just go with classic because that would just make everybody depressed and want to kill themselves.
You know, I disagree with that statement.
I'm teasing.
I know you are. I disagree with that statement, but you know what? What do you got next?
What I have next is Charlie Pride, ironically enough, who is actually of the color that you were mentioning.
Yeah, he's African-American.
And this is Kiss an Angel Good Morning.
Aha! Point, set, and match. This is a happy love song.
Yes, it is. Charlie Pride got his first guitar from his mom when he was 14, taught himself how to play. Even though he wanted to be a pro baseball player, he kept up with his music. Before his music took off, though, he played minor league baseball, but in 1953 got hurt, which caused him to lose some of the heat off of his fastball. And he began to sing before the games, which helped increase attendance. Even during his baseball career, he was still playing, and in 1958 recorded some songs, but really didn't hit his stride until 1966 with Just Between You and Me, which was nominated for a Grammy. He continued to record and tour and became a member of the Grand Ole Opry in 1993. And one of his biggest hits is Kiss an Angel Good Morning, and let's take a quick listen.
You've got to kiss an angel good morning and let her know you think about her when you're gone. Kiss an angel good morning and love her like the devil when you get back home.
Now, he's released a total of 47 studio albums, the most recent being July of 2017.
Really?
Yeah. Like, what is it, 3 months ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Holy shit.
So, and he started in the 50s, so, I mean, just think of how old this guy's got to be.
Right. Now, a little trivia, he is one of the only three black country artists to have, quote-unquote, considerable success, the others being DeFord Bailey and Darius Rucker. Also, as of 2010, he became a minority owner of the Texas Rangers.
Wait. Darius Rucker is black?
Shut up. Darius Rucker, Hootie and the Blowfish?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, never mind.
That's awesome. So, now about the song, Kiss an Angel Good Morning is Pride's biggest hit. It's a slower-paced, steel guitar-laced classic country song. Charlie Pride is as historic a country artist as you'll ever find, but I can't really get behind his voice. Love the music, not a fan of his voice. There's just something about it that kind of rubs me the wrong way. Love the lyrics. If it would be sung by anybody else, I think I would like it. I like the music. Anybody else, I think I'd be okay with it.
So are we giving this a good, a bad, or a eh?
It's got to be kind of a half and half. I mean, voice is an eh. Music, song is a good.
All right. Okay.
So what do you think?
I actually love this song. This is just more classic country that makes you happy. Kind of a strange song for country because everything is actually good in here. I actually really love Charlie Pride's voice. I really enjoy it. It's melodic. It's kind of sappy even in this song.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy that. You know, like you said, he was one of the few black guys to really make it in country.
Right, right.
So, you know, I don't have a whole lot to say about it. Love the song. I'm absolutely shocked that he put an album out 3 months ago. I honestly, if somebody had asked me, I'd have said he'd probably dead by now. You know?
Right.
But I don't know. I really enjoyed it. So.
All right. Well, let's kick off your next one.
All right. We will do that. And actually, I'm going to kick this one off. This is something we don't do very often. We have an artist on two songs in this countdown, but they're both duets. That's why I allowed it to happen.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about now.
Okay. So the first song we're doing is Seven Spanish Angels,
which is
a song by Willie Nelson and Ray Charles. It was written by Troy Seals and Eddie Setzer and recorded, like I said, in a duet. Well, actually, it was recorded by Ray Charles as a duet with Willie Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they got so very poignant about that, but they did.
Because he's the main one you hear singing.
Well, there's two verses. They each take a verse, but Ray does all the
kind of the anthem, the chorus.
The chorus, yeah, he does the chorus. So it was released in November 1984 as a single from Charles' 1984 album Friendship. Charles and Nelson split the verses, with Charles singing the first and Nelson the second. Charles sang the first and second choruses, with Nelson joining in the outro. It was also included on Nelson's 1985 compilation album, Half Nelson. I kind of like the reference to wrestling.
That is pretty cool.
So, Seven Spanish Angels was the most successful of Charles' 8 hits on the country chart. The single spent 1 week at number one and a total of 12 weeks on the country chart. This is your chance to pray.
There were 7 Spanish angels at the altar of the sun. They were praying for the lovers in the valley of the gun. When the battle stopped and the smoke cleared, there was thunder from the throne. And 7 Spanish angels took another angel home.
The song is about an outlaw and his lover who are trying to outrun a posse sent to return them to Texas. When they are cornered, they decide to fight the approaching lawmen. Before the final gunfight, the two embrace, speaking of their belief that God will spare them. The gunfight then commences, with the outlaw firing upon the posse. He is immediately shot and killed, prompting his distraught lover to pick up his rifle. She tearfully prays, "Father, please forgive me. I can't make it without my man." Although she is aware there is no ammunition in the chamber, she points it at the lawman and is then shot dead. After each death, 7 Spanish angels gather to pray for the lovers. This is followed by thunder from the throne and the angels taking another angel home. It's kind of, I don't know why, but I got goosebumps
right,
reading that. Yeah, I got goosebumps reading that. And it's one of those songs. It's a beautiful song. The way that it's
presented
the music, the way it's written and put together and everything. It's a beautiful song. But when you really get down to it, it's a song about two outlaws that get shot down. You know, and it actually elevates the outlaws because they're being taken to heaven by angels. You know, and
kind of glamorizing the
whole outlaw thing.
Right.
Which, you know, Willie Nelson wasn't one of the outlaw country guys back in the day.
Wasn't he a highwayman?
He was a highwayman.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a great song. I really enjoy this song. I actually listened to this song 3 times while I was writing stuff because I really enjoy it. It's a short song.
Oh, it is.
But I really enjoyed it. What are your thoughts on this one?
You know, and I like Ray Charles. I really enjoy him. I mean, I didn't watch the movie. I haven't read about his history of his life. There have been interesting parts about it. But his singing, him and Stevie Wonder, love both of them. I think great artists. Just such a soulful, like, yearning voice.
Yep, and I totally give you that. I totally agree with that.
Now, I personally feel, speaking of soul, I think this song has a bit too much soul in the voice to be a country song. It's more gospel, but then again, gospel and country kind of bleed into each other.
They kind of hold hands.
Right, exactly, especially when you come to, like, the Elvis-type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Now, even with the music, it still sounds, it sounds R&B to me. It doesn't sound country. It sounds more rhythm and blues.
Yeah, it to me, it kind of has that Spanish sound behind it too.
Kind of, but
again, you're right. It does have an R&B sound to it.
But that could just, that could even just be Ray's voice.
Absolutely.
You know, because Ray is not rock.
No, not at all.
I mean, he is soul. He is blues, especially.
He's just got a silk fucking voice, dude.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Although I have to say, getting back with the Ray and Stevie thing, I would pick Stevie over Ray any day.
See, and I think personally, I think I'd go the other way, but I would listen to either one of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, as far as the song, I enjoy it as, again, as like a soulful song. I enjoy that. As far as being classic country, not sure if it 100% fits, but because Willie Nelson's in it, I guess it does. So I say sure.
So sure you like it. Sure it's a country song.
Sure I like it. Sure it's a country song. I will say that if I had to 1 out of 10 it, I would say probably a solid 6.
Okay, fair enough. All right, man, take us into your next one.
All right, we're going to go with a little Alabama. And honestly, how can you have a less or a more country-named band?
True.
Seriously.
No, absolutely.
You know, all right, we got Alabama with you if you're going to play in Texas.
You
got
to have a fiddle in the band.
Exactly. Now, Alabama formed of cousins Randy Owen, Jeff Cook, and Teddy Gentry in 1969. Owen and Gentry learned guitar and sang together in church before age 6. They played gigs in the early 1960s when Cook joined in 69, calling themselves Young Country.
Fair enough.
They became a professional band in 1972, adding a drummer going to change their name to Wild Country, all one word. In 1977, they were convinced to change their name to Alabama Band, which became Alabama, because apparently that extra word was too much of a problem. And they released a few studio albums in the 70s, but it wasn't until 1980s, My Home's in Alabama, where they hit the U.S. country charts at number 3. They number 1 with their next effort, Feels So Right.
So I got to ask you, do you know in your research, are they actually from Alabama?
I don't know. I would guess that they have some ties to it.
So out there, if you know, are the boys in Alabama from Alabama, or are they like Georgia fuckers that are just stealing a name?
Or is this like, you know, from Forrest Gump, when he's like, there's, you know, Cleveland, he was from New York, and there was Albany, who was from California, and I don't know where Tex was from.
Yeah.
So anyways, if you're going to play in Texas, just a great, kind of a rollicking song almost. Let's just take a quick listen, then we'll go into it.
If you're going to play in Texas, you got to have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for Louisiana band. So rosin up that bow for faded love and let's all dance. If you're going to play in Texas, you got to have a fiddle in the band.
Now, getting back with the band first, and then we'll talk about the song. The popularity started to kind of wane a little bit in the 80s, and they were overshadowed by more traditional artists, but were still very popular playing live. They did a farewell tour in 2002 and sort of disbanded in 2004. They stayed busy doing solo stuff, and in 2010, they reunited to help organize Bama Rising, which is a benefit concert for the 2011 super outbreak of tornadoes.
Okay.
Remember when Tuscaloosa got nailed and everything else?
Yeah, Tuscaloosa got nailed like 4 days in a row.
Well, and with that, the current Hurricane Nate coming up right now, it could get smacked again. Now, they started touring again in 2013, where they're still popular and still touring. Alabama's always been country, but a little bit of rock thrown in. As time grew on, they got more pop rock to kind of go with the times, per se. And this song comes in just under the 1985 limit, came out in 1984. It's a classic tune that has a great harmonies, and I'm sorry, they just sound great together.
Oh, yeah. Alabama is one of those bands. It's like Alabama, the Statler Brothers, that era of music. They all knew how to sing four-part harmony.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just incredible how well they sing together. I mean, that was obviously practice and natural talent, but more so just hours and hours of practice.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, it's a classic tune. Again, it has great harmonies. There's a good beat to it, and it tells a story. It really does. It's talking about kind of like Wild Cherries Play That Funky Music, where they're telling a story about what the crowd wants, and they acquiesce to the crowd by adding a fiddle to the band.
Yep.
Now, it's got more of a beat, as I mentioned, than other classic country, and perhaps it was a indicator in how country would change, being as how it was 1 year before the cutoff.
Right.
I mean, that's a thought. What do you think?
You know, Alabama is classic country.
Now, oh, yeah.
I mean, granted, they're still around today. But this song is just a fun song about trying to play country music in Texas without a fiddle. It takes a guitar and drums and everything else, but if you don't play with a fiddle,
what's the point?
You're just doing it wrong.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, in fact, in the song, you know, they say the guy stands up in the back and says, "We all love what you're doing. Boys, don't get us wrong. But you're just missing something in your song." And yes, I was quoting lyrics there. But
constructive criticism, people.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing I wanted to figure out is, you know, like somebody stands up and yells Cotton Eye Joe. And I always thought Cotton Eye Joe was like a new song. Like,
no, no.
But no, it's not. No, I was going to go take a look, but I haven't had a chance.
No, Cotton Eye Joe. I mean, I don't know the exact year, but I mean, this was like a folk song way, way back in the day. In fact, I think it might even be a foreign folk song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to take a look, but no, yeah. Cotton Eye Joe's an old song. I mean, probably one you're thinking of is the Rednecks one that came out in the 90s.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Which is played at Texas Roadhouse whenever they break it down and whatever else.
Yeah.
Entertaining song, but at the same time, it's like, eh. But in anyways, moving on.
Yeah, you know, it's just a great song. It's great classic music. These guys know how to sing. They know how to play. You know, they are, you know, they're one of country's better boy bands.
Yeah, I would put it there. You're about right. It is a boy band.
I really enjoy them. You like this song, correct?
I would say this is my favorite of all of them.
Okay, so, you know, that's all about all I have to say on that, though.
Okay, cool. And I think you are up next.
I am. We are going to go with that other song I was talking about.
The other Willie song?
The other Willie song. So it's called Poncho and Lefty. It's a song written by country music artist, and I'm going to kill his name, Townes Van Zandt. Often considered his most enduring and well-known song, Van Zandt first recorded it for his 1972 album, The Late Great Townes Van Zandt. The song tells the story of a Mexican bandit named Pancho and a more enigmatic character, Lefty. God, I hate English sometimes. The song tells of Pancho's death and implies that he was betrayed by his associate, Lefty, who was paid off by the Mexican federales.
Dick.
Although the lyrics are not exactly reconcilable with the historic details of the life and death of the famous Mexican revolutionary Pancho Villa, Van Zandt does not rule out the idea. In an interview, he recalled, "I realize that I wrote it, but it's hard to take credit for writing it because it came out of the blue. It came through me, and it's a really nice song. I think I finally found out what it's about. I've always wondered what it's about. I kind of always knew it wasn't about Pancho Villa. And then somebody told me that Pancho Villa had a buddy whose name in Spanish meant lefty. But in the song, my song, Pancho gets hung. They only let him hang around out of kindness, I suppose. And the real Pancho Villa was assassinated. So let's ride with the outlaws."
Lefty, he can't sing the blues all night long like he used to. The dust of Pancho bit down south. Ended up and left his mouth. The day they laid poor Pancho low, Lefty split for Ohio, where he got the bread to go. There ain't nobody knows.
So Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson released this on their album Pancho and Lefty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't write anything more because honestly, Merle Haggard, as far as I'm concerned, that is classic country music.
He passed away this last year.
Pass away this last year, but his voice and the way he sang and the music he sang about, there's nobody better. Now, Willie Nelson is also up there. I mean, Willie Nelson's been around forever.
Oh, no shit.
I have seen footage of Willie Nelson standing in the suit and tie with the coiffed hair, you know, the whole thing that country music was.
Before the long hair?
Before the long hair and everything. And it's funny because you see this guy standing and you're like, who the hell is that? And he opens his mouth and you're like, holy shit, it's Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
You know, because he sounds the same.
Oh, yeah. He's one of those very recognizable voices,
but
too.
When he first came out, he was just a session singer.
He was a cover guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And he's become this country legend. There's no other way to put it. And I really enjoy his music, and I really love Merle Haggard's music. And, you know, I almost put Merle Haggard's song, I can't think of it. But we used it a couple episodes ago, so that's why I didn't use it again.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, it's just, I had to get Merle on here somehow, and the best way it seemed to do that was with Willie.
It's a duet, I suppose.
So, you know, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, the song's a good song. The song originally was written in 72, but I guess it was the duet in duet. Just wanted to turn French all of a sudden. the duet in 1983 with Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. Willie has always been original country. I mean, so is Merle Haggard. I mean, every picture. I mean, Merle Haggard to me is kind of like the rougher gang older brother of Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Because Johnny Cash is kind of, I mean, he's not straight-laced, but I mean, you see him with, you know, Flipping the Bird and everything else. But I mean, Merle Haggard is just the grumbly country, like out in the country version of the city-fied version of Johnny
Cash.
He's
that outlaw, and the only one that I can think of as more of an outlaw in country music, we're going to talk about him later, so I'm not going to say his name here, but okay. I'm sure you can know who I'm talking about.
I've got a couple ideas.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the song, I was a little bit surprised because listening to this one here, Merle Haggard didn't kick in until after 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm listening to this going, okay, it's a duet. Okay, where the fuck is Merle Haggard? Seriously. Oh, there he is. And I could not find a clip that had both of them in it. So we've got Willie on this one. But just rest assured, if you listen to the whole song, you will hear Merle Haggard.
Yeah, and you know, this was made into a movie, which starred Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. Mm-hmm. Merle Haggard played Lefty, which is why he waited so long in the song to come in, because he was kind of singing that view of point from the guy who's now running.
Sure, sure.
You know, he hauls ass to Ohio after they hang Pancho.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, it's just, I think that's why they, well, maybe that's not why they did the song that way, but maybe that's why they cast the movie the way they did.
It could be. It's, I'm not sure about the casting, though. I mean, Willie Nelson, kind of a red-haired white guy playing a Hispanic guy, but
yeah.
Stranger things have happened, I suppose. They cast a white kid as Avatar, the airbender, which drew huge outrage.
Oh, yeah, that was big. That was big.
But I digress. The song is a good story song. It's a little bit of a longer one. I think they kind of extended it out just a little bit too much. They kind of cut a little bit out of it.
Maybe.
But overall, it's a decent song, good story song, absolutely classic country by two of the pioneers.
Right.
And that's all I have to say about that.
All right, so what do you got next?
All right, we are going to go to the oldest gentleman on this list, and that is Hank Williams Sr.
All right.
Now, Hiram King Hank Williams, much like his middle name suggests, is the king of country music, hands down.
Yeah, I'm not. You're not going to get an argument from me.
Yeah, I didn't figure. Now, born in Mount Olive, Alabama. His family moved to Georgiana, Alabama when he was 8. It was around that time he met up with blues artist Rufus Payne, who mentored him and taught him how to play guitar for money or food. Works for me.
Well, either way, you get food out of it, because if you...
You can either buy your food or he just brings food for you.
Yeah.
Now, Williams changed his name to Hank as he felt it was a little bit better of a country music name and began his career in 1937, where he started as a backup singer. He was fired from the gig because of alcohol abuse, which is going to be an ongoing thing.
Yep, it's actually what caused the death of him.
Mm-hmm. Now, he tried out in 1946, he tried out for the Grand Ole Opry, but was rejected. And then the next year signed with MGM and released his first major hit, Moving On Over. After his 1949 version of Lovesick Blues, he was offered a spot in the Opry where he performed and toured representing them. 1949 also is where I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry came out, which is what we're going to take a quick listen to right here.
Did you ever see a robin weep when leaves began to die? Like me, he's lost the will to live. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
Now, continuing on with the life of Hank, he recorded some religious-themed material in the 50s as Luke the Drifter, so as not to tarnish his country name, and around that time released more hits, including Cold, Cold Heart in 51, which was at the peak of his career. That is when things started to take a turn, and not in a good way. In the winter of 51, he fell and aggravated an old injury, and he got back on painkillers and booze. And in the fall of 52, the Grand Ole Opry dismissed him for missing shows to be with his girlfriend, Billie Jean Jones, and habitual drunkenness. His last recording session was September 23rd, 1952, where he recorded Your Cheatin' Heart with a couple of other songs. Due to heart problems that started to flare up around then, coupled with his drug and alcohol problems, Williams died January 1st of 1953. During his career, he only had 2 studio albums, however, released 31 singles, and after his death, has been much more. 8 live albums, 30 singles, and 10 studio albums.
Talk about post no.
Like posthumous
releases. Yeah, posthumous releases, yeah.
Amazing. Now, he lived the life he sung about, and which is why he earned his title as the King of Country. This song deals with sadness, and I'm sure you could guess, regarding heartbreak. It was inspired by Williams' rocky relationship with his wife and Hank Williams Jr.'s mom, Audrey Shepard. You can hear the true suffering and sadness in his voice. I mean, it's there. You know, I mean, I can see some dude, elbows on a bar, a mug of High Life or Blatz or whatever else, and just bemoaning this and having this come out as the song. There is no greater country classic artist than Hank Sr., hands down. I mean, I know you're not going to argue this, but it just has to be said.
No, I agree. And I'm going to step back a second. This is why I thought I had the oldest guy on the list. He's not on my list.
That's, well, so you're right. On your list, he was the oldest guy. We're playing the technicality card now.
Right. So either I missed him in what you sent me, or you missed him in what you sent me for a list of songs. But neither here nor there. Hank Williams Sr., God, what can you say? The guy is classic, twangy, sad.
Nasally
country.
Mm-hmm.
He is everything that country music was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's think about this here. Let's say that you know country music, which you do,
mm-hmm.
but if flash answers, someone asks you the question, name the first country artist that comes to mind. What's the first one you're going to say? Probably Hank.
Well,
most people would probably say Hank.
I would probably go with Johnny Cash.
Yeah, but he still turned more to rock later on.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you talk classic country, I think a lot of people.
Yeah, I would probably go towards him or Patsy Cline or somebody like that. Right. That era.
Right. I mean, there's five possible answers on this one that almost everybody will go with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but anyways, going on.
But anyway, so you know, it's just I love Hank Sr. stuff. My dad was a huge Hank Sr. fan. I grew up with this. I grew up with "There's a Tear in My Beer," "I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry." All of it. I mean, I grew up with it. I listened to it, and it was old when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, but I don't know. I don't know what to say about him. It's all been said. Everybody knows the story.
Right.
It's just good music.
There it is. Why don't we move on to the next one then?
All right. So up next, we're going to talk about Conway Twitty. Now, Conway Twitty was never one of my favorites. However, this song, "Tight Fitting Jeans," is a song that was written by Michael Huffman and recorded by American country music artist Conway Twitty. It was released in June 1981 as the first single from his album, Mr. T. "Tight Fitting Jeans" was Conway Twitty's 26th number one on the country chart.
Good lord.
The single stayed at number one for 1 week and spent a total of 10 weeks on the country chart. The original album cut of the song did not feature any electric guitar leads. They were overdubbed for the single version after the album's release. Let's gander at some tight-fitting jeans.
She said I'm married money, I'm used to wearing pearls, but I've always dreamed of being just a good old boy's girl. So tonight I left those crystal candlelights to live a dream. And partner, there's a tiger in these tight-fitting jeans.
And no, it wasn't either one of us wearing those tight-fitting jeans.
Oh, God, no, nobody wants to see that.
No, because they would split right down the ass if it would have been either one of us.
So Conway Twitty, born Harold Lloyd Jenkins, was an American country music singer. He also had success in the rock and roll, rock, R&B, and pop genres. From 1971 to 1976, Twitty received a string of Country Music Association awards for duets with Loretta Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Although never a member of the Grand Ole Opry, he was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Rockabilly Hall of Fame. Like I said, never a big Conway Twitty fan. There was something about his voice, a lot like you said with Charlie Pride,
mm-hmm.
just didn't sit well for me.
Just kind of rubbed you the wrong way.
Rubbed me the wrong way. Great song, though. "Tight Fitting Jeans," I really like that song.
It's comical, actually.
It is. It's very comical, and that's you know, 90% of the reason I like it.
Right. He was on Hee Haw. I remember watching that on Channel 12 all the time.
Yep.
Regardless if you're a country fan, it was just funny. And I guess maybe my notes are wrong. I thought he did get into the Opry eventually.
Nope.
Or maybe he just performed on the Opry.
Yeah, I think he did perform at the Opry, but he wasn't a member of the Opry.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Conway Twitty really got new life because of all the Family Guy references, because they always talk about him and then cut away to one of his concerts where Conway Twitty, if you look at him, he has a Botox face. He does not emote on any of his songs. I dare you to watch any of his videos, watch him, and he is stone-faced, and it's like he wants to smile, but he can't. Decent voice. I like his voice. I'm not sure. Other than the fact the song is funny, I'm not a huge fan of it. It's okay, but this one's actually pretty funny. So I would say it's pretty decent mid-range.
Okay, fair enough. What do you got next?
All right. We're going to go with the song I believe that one of our namesakes is, and that's George Jones with He Stopped Loving Her Today.
That would be you. I made that you.
Yes, I appreciate that. Just wait until the modern country and hear what I got for Chad. You're going to like it.
I can't maybe. Wait.
All right. George Glenn Jones got the musical background from his family. He played harmonica and guitar while his mother played piano in church each Sunday, another theme I'm sensing. When he was 7, his folks bought him a radio, and all they'd listen to was the Grand Ole Opry, which fueled his fire to break into country music. At 16, he moved to Texas to meet his idol Hank Williams Sr., and was a U.S. Marine until discharge in 1953. Less than a year later, he recorded his first album and thus began to climb the ladder. He was pressured to do some rockabilly, as we mentioned before,
right.
due to Elvis's popularity in 1956, which he did, but kind of half-heartedly. In 1959, he had his first number one with White Lightning, ironically more rock than rockabilly, Cuts, which did rather well. And He Stopped Loving Her Today came out in the 80s. In fact, actually, I believe it was exactly 1980. This song is commonly voted as one of, if not the greatest country song of all time. Contracts were renewed that he had lost, and he and Jones enjoyed success again, even though they were still drinking and drugging. Let's take a quick listen of He Stopped Loving Her Today.
He stopped loving her today. They placed a wreath upon his door, and soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today.
Now, George Jones was in and out of rehab quite a bit due to alcohol and drugs and everything else, and most of his later music was pure country. During his farewell tour, the Grand Tour, that was announced in 2012, he performed his last concert on April 6th of 2013, where he passed away on April 26th. The song is about a guy who just has a fire burning in the woman who left him. I mean, pure and simple. It's another heartbreak song, and he just hoped that she'd return, and he did finally get over loving her by dying, which I suppose is pretty much the only main way to really get over something if you've got that much of a heartbreak for it. It's really heartfelt, but sad as hell if you think about it, and this is one of those songs that would also have a cowboy drinking in their drink or crying in their drink of choice. I can't really say too much else about it. I mean, it's a sad-ass song.
Yeah.
But honestly, this is one that definitely could go on to a love CD. Even though it's sad, it could go on to, because, I mean, this is showing that you have the passion, till death do you part.
Yeah, absolutely. So, to me, this song gets me to reflecting. It's a song about a man whose wife... See, and I take it a little different than you did.
Okay.
I have it as it's a man whose wife has passed away. And he keeps everything of hers with him until the day he dies. Then he stops loving her.
Okay. But the end result's about the same, though.
Yeah. And only when he died and he went to be with her. That's the way I kind of heard this song. You know, this is one of those, and I'm going to steal one of your lines, but this is a song that kind of gets me right in the feels. Every time. So, you know, it's just one of those things. But, great song, George Jones. I mean, really.
Yeah, he is up there with Willie and Hank.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that have been around forever, does a lot of good work, and that's about all I have to say about it. I mean, I really enjoy the song, but, you know, where do you sit on this one?
It was all right. Again, it's a sad song, and as Elton John said, sad songs say so much.
True.
I had to throw that in there. It's a good sad song. It's a good love song, regardless of how you interpret it. I think it belongs as classic country. It's a decent song.
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to jump into my next one. So, Luckenbach, Texas, Back to the Basics of Love, is a song recorded by the American country music artist Waylon Jennings. Now, when I say Waylon Jennings, what do you think?
Oh, God, off the top of my head, I just think of Waylon Jennings. I don't have any...
The Ballad of the Duke Boys.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I should have known that.
He was the balladeer for the...
He was the balladeer, absolutely.
Anyway, it was released in April 1977 as the first single from the album Ol' Waylon. It was written by Chips Moman and Bobby Emmons. This is one moment to just feel the music.
Let's go to Luckenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us beautiful.
like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and Blue Eyes crying in the rain, out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain.
The song refers to a couple whose positions in high society have placed strains on their marriages. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. And finances, four-car garage, and we're still building on. Jennings suggests that the couple return to the basics of love and relocate to the small town of Lukenbach, Texas. References in the song include the Hatfields and McCoys, Hank Williams, Mickey Newberry, Jerry Jeff Walker, and Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. The final refrain of the song features a guest vocal by Willie Nelson. Shit, he made it three times! It is included in A Texas Melody, composed by Jim Clancy and sung by the Vocal Majority. And in 1981, Elvin and the Chipmunks covered the song for their country album, Urban Chipmunk.
Kind of want to go find that.
I kind of do, too.
Awesome.
So what are your thoughts on this one? I mean, yeah. You know, Waylon Jennings, the balladeer, he was one of those guys. He passed away recently, too.
I think so, yeah.
Last year, maybe.
Either
I think it was 20. I think it was the curse of 2016.
Could very well be, yeah.
But anyway, I like his stuff. I don't know a ton of Waylon Jennings stuff.
I know the theme song, and that's about it up until this one here.
Okay.
I mean, you're right, back to basics of love. You know, it's classic country tropes. Not a terrible song. I would say it's middle of the range, maybe upper, because Waylon Jennings got a great voice, and he's very tight with his music. Name drops like a son of a bitch on this song. Left, right, and sideways.
That happens a lot, though, in classic country.
Oh, it does. Absolutely. Decent song. I really don't have a whole hell of a lot to say about it.
Okay, fair enough. What do you got next?
We're going to go with the son of a legend. That would be Hank Jr.
Oh, now we're still talking good music, man.
Yes, absolutely. And this one was just before our cutoff. It was 1982. The song was Country Boy Can Survive. Now, Randall Williams, who is professionally known as Hank Williams Jr., or what's his nickname?
Bo Cephas.
There you go. Do you know why he got the nickname?
I do not.
It was actually a nickname he got because it was a ventriloquist dummy.
Okay.
So his dad nicknamed him after the dummy. I mean, I don't know if I'd be proud of that, but
I don't either.
But if you notice in a lot of his songs, he calls himself Bo Cephas. In fact, actually, you know, Rockin' Randall Hank from All My Rowdy Friends is coming over. So
yeah.
Anyways, moving on. It was Rod Brasfield's ventriloquist dummy. And after Hank Sr. died, he was raised by mom, who had a lot of musicians visit the home, which helped influence his style, including Fats Domino and Jerry Lee Lewis. He actually had some success recording, but got sick of being a Hank Williams impersonator.
Yeah, and that's how he started. I mean, he did his daddy's music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, moved back to Alabama, where he kind of went on the outlaw country path and started to flourish in his own popularity. Again, mentioning with the All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over, which they turned into the Monday Night Football theme.
Yeah. Until he said something politically.
But it's back again.
Is it?
Yes, they actually, I think as of this year, it's back.
Oh, nice, nice.
He got four consecutive Emmy Awards because of that song, actually. But then, as you mentioned, he was dropped in 2011 over political comments, but is going to be back for the 2017 season. He's got a great storied career. He had 56 studio albums, releasing as recently as 2016, and over 100 singles.
That's insane.
It is. Hank laments about the many stereotypical things associated with the lives of those living out of the big city. Let's take a quick listen.
I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Now, the song was well-received by the public, maxing at number 2 on the Billboard Hot Country. And in 2001 was rewritten and re-released as America Will Survive in response to the September 11th terrorist attack. It's a solid country song. I mean, it shows the rockabilly outlaw country roots. I enjoy Bo Cephas' music. In fact, I think most of his stuff is just fun. Country or rock, which kind of go back and forth. I really, yeah. Really enjoy his stuff. Hank Jr. is a legacy artist that is still country but is loved because he helped start the country rock genre.
Right.
A little piece of trivia that you may not know. The reason that he adopted his sunglasses, beard, and hat look was to hide the scars and disfigurement he had that he received from a near-fatal mountain climbing accident he had in 1975.
I actually do know that, and the reason I know that is because I watched his life story. They did a made-for-TV life story of Hank Jr.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, I dig Hank Jr. stuff. In fact, I think I have his greatest hit CD, and I will listen to that straight front to back. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, he is one of these guys. He's just a great country singer. This is a great country song about why it's better to be a redneck or a hillbilly than to be a city slicker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with everything Bocephus has to say in this song, but I think a country life is more laid back than a quick-paced city life. I just love this song. Bocephus, you know, Country Boy Can Survive, All My Rowdy Friends, all the songs that, you know, like you said, 100 singles. I probably, if I heard them, I would probably be able to pick out a good 60 or 70 of them.
You'd probably recognize them.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just one of these guys. I really love his stuff. You know, he's lived a hard life. He had a lot of issues with the fact that he was the son of Hank Williams Jr.
That's a hell of a shadow to try to...
Yeah, it was a hell of a shadow. And, you know, his mom put him out there singing daddy's songs for years. And though I'm sure it made decent money, I can understand why he wanted to get away from that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, but I absolutely love this song. So I don't have a whole lot more to say about Bocephus.
So let's move to your next one.
All right, so my last one for this episode... And sit back and grab a beer, because this is a long one, is The Gambler is a song written by Don Schultz, recorded by several artists, most famously by American country music singer Kenny Rogers.
And country chicken artist.
Chicken artist?
Oh, they had Kenny Rogers Roasters, remember?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Anyways, go on.
So, Don Schultz wrote the song in August 1976 when he was 23 years old. It took 2 years of shopping the song around Nashville before Bobby Bear recorded it on his album, Bear, at the urging of Shel Silverstein, of all people.
The poet guy.
The poet guy, yeah.
Nice.
Bear's version didn't catch on and was never released as a single, so Schultz recorded it himself. But this version failed to chart higher than number 65. However, other musicians took notice and recorded the song in 1978, including Johnny Cash, who put it on his album Gone Girl. However, it was Kenny Rogers who finally broke the song loose in a version produced by Larry Butler. His version was a number one country hit and even made its way to the pop charts at the time when country songs rarely crossed over.
Mm-hmm.
It was released in November 1978 as the title track from his album The Gambler, which won him the Grammy Award for Best Male Country Vocal Performance in 1980. In 2006, Don Schultz appeared in the Kenny Rogers career retrospective documentary, The Journey,
mm-hmm.
where he praised both Rogers and Butler's contributions to the song, stating, "They added several ideas that were not mine, including the new guitar intro. It was one of the five consecutive songs by Rogers to hit number one on the Billboard country music charts. On the pop chart, the song made it to number 16 and number 3 on the Easy Listening chart. It became one of Rogers' most enduring hits and a signature song. As of November 13th, 2013, the digital sales of the single stood at 798,000 copies.
Wow.
It's a gamble, but let's listen to it.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
The song itself tells the story of a late night meeting on a train, bound for nowhere, between the narrator and a man known only as the Gambler. The Gambler tells the narrator that he can tell he is down on his luck by the look in his eyes and offers him advice in exchange for his last swallow of whiskey. After the Gambler takes the drink and a cigarette, he gives the following advice. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. The Gambler then mentions that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away and knowing what to keep, and that the best you can hope for is to die in your sleep. At this point, the Gambler puts out the cigarette and goes to sleep. At the end of the song, we are told that somewhere in the darkness, the Gambler, he broke even, and that the narrator finds an ace that I could keep. In his final words, Rogers' rendition in an appearance on The Muppet Show indicates the gambler actually dies in his sleep when he broke even, thus really making those his final words ever spoken. I always thought he died.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, breaking even, you know, you're not out ahead or below.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I can tell you enjoy this song.
I do. I love Kenny Rogers, early Kenny Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the stuff he did with Dolly Parton, the stuff he did on his own, it was just, he's got the voice.
The gravelly.
Yeah, it's just perfect. You know, he started out in rock and roll. He actually released 4 albums in rock albums, and they all failed.
He doesn't have the right voice for rock.
Right, and that's what it came to. And he went to country and found where he needed to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really like the song. I think this is probably one of my favorite songs of his.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's, you know, you could argue that it's overplayed, because it is.
Well, yeah, because everybody knows it.
Everybody knows it. But I really enjoy it. What are your thoughts on this?
I have nothing else to say other than I love this song. I mean, it's a great song. It tells a great story. He's got an excellent voice. And it's Kenny fucking Rogers. I mean,
right.
There's nothing else to say.
Right. And now that this episode hasn't been long enough already, you got an extra song. You got a bonus song.
I got a bonus one because I would be remiss if I didn't include this one.
And this was the gentleman I was talking about earlier about being more outlaw than anybody else.
It is, and that was David Allan Coe with You Never Even Called Me By My Name. David Allan Coe started writing songs on the encouragement of Screamin' Jay Hawkins, of all people.
Really?
Yeah, where he spent time with in jail. at the Ohio State Penitentiary.
Nice. I like how you did that.
I know, right? After getting out of prison in 67, where he lived in a hearse, he moved to Nashville to start his career. He released his first album in 1970, Penitentiary Blues, clever, where he went on tour with Grand Funk Railroad. You know, we're an American band, people.
Yeah, I know who Grand Funk Railroad is, but that doesn't seem very country.
Oh, it gets better. And it wasn't his own releases, but rather songs he'd written for other country artists that brought him to main success. He wrote songs as well as recorded his own material during the 70s. And when in 1977, Johnny Paycheck covered his song, Take This Job and Shove It, which turned out to be Coe's most successful
song. How the fuck did I miss Johnny Paycheck?
How did we not have Patsy Cline or Dolly Parton?
Part two.
This is why this is volume one.
Exactly.
Now, later he released multiple albums that were considered underground, not exactly meant for the mainstream, which this song is actually part of one of them. During that time, his popularity surged, despite a spat with Jimmy Buffett. Considering both musicians are still active, it's obviously no one really lost that fight. Anyway, since co-released multiple records, he's also written songs and worked with other artists, including Dimebag Darrell of Pantera and Kid Rock.
Okay, Kid Rock I get, because he kind of straddles that line. But Dimebag Darrell?
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, You Never Even Called Me By My Name. Before anything else, let's take a quick listen, then we'll finish up. Now, the song is much like classic country songs, as it has a plodding beat and typically country guitar song. You definitely don't want to judge or give up on the song, though, because there's a rather hilarious final verse in the song that shows off his outlaw country roots. In that verse, he goes on to mention and kind of riffs on country tropes that nearly always appeared in country songs, like mama and trains and trucks and prison. I've heard this song so many times, and I love this song. This is one of my drinking songs in college. I can sing this song loaded. That's how much I listen to this song. So I don't know what you think, but I love this song. I'm not sure about all the rest of Coe's stuff, but I thoroughly enjoyed the song.
So, you know, okay, let's talk about the song first, and then I'll talk a little bit more about David Allan Coe. So it's a great classic country song. David Allan Coe is an underrated country musician, in my opinion. This song has a good time pointing out who he isn't, and why you should call him anything you want. It doesn't really matter. You don't have to call me darling. You never even call me by my name. Now,
Don't women get mad when you don't call them by their name and they call them baby or whatever?
Women do. But have you ever noticed that a lot of women have pet names for their boyfriends or husbands or whatever?
But it's not okay for that for us to.
Well, it depends.
Depending on the person.
Depends on the person. My wife, I have a pet name for my wife, which I'm not going to divulge here. But, you know, he, however, caused a lot of controversy because he used a lot of racially insensitive words in his music.
In some of the other ones, yes.
Yes. So that's why.
Hence the underground.
The underground, the underrated ability of his music. He's actually better known as a songwriter than a performer.
Yes. Except for like the Sturgis crowd, like the biker crowd, they actually are more of the funding. But yes, I would agree with your statement on that one.
So I don't have a whole lot more to say about that. You know, I think we need to wrap this one up. It's gone long. I apologize. But, you know, before we do that, here's the tally. So out of 14, there should be 15 songs. So out of 15 songs, because I forgot the Hank song again, you actually said you liked 9 of them.
Okay.
You were with 5 of them, and there was only one that you really didn't like, and that was Coal Miner's Daughter by Loretta Lynn. So I like this tally. I really do. Because the next time you go to me, I don't like country, I'm going to be like, fuck you, yes you do.
Just keep in mind, I got a memory of an elephant too, so.
So anyway, you know, we want to thank you guys for listening. We're going to go into the end here. We're going to do the trivia question, and then we'll wrap it up. So read that trivia question again.
All right. Trivia question is, Willie Nelson has used the same guitar since 1969. He has a name for it. What is the name?
I believe it is Honeysuckle Rose.
You would be wrong.
Really?
Trigger.
Trigger. Honeysuckle Rose is his fucking bus.
Yes.
Okay, listen up, everybody. Turn up your volumes. Announcement.
All right. So, if you want to reach out to us, let us know what you think of this episode or any other episode we've done up to this point, you can do so. There's a few easy ways. First of all, you can reach out to us through email at musicchallengepodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line there. We'll get back to you. I promise we will. There is a few other ways if you're into more into the social media thing. First of all, you can find us on Facebook at POI Network or at Musically Challenged Podcast. Either way, you can reach out to us. Leave us a note there. We'll get back to you on Facebook as well. And new, everybody.
Here's our announcement.
We are now on Twitter. That's right. We now tweet. Go ahead. Tweet.
Well, I was just, you know, if you ever wanted to get in touch with us but just couldn't pull that trigger. Maybe you just had the burning desire to say something to one of us, but the mere concept of Facebook or email just really aren't your thing. Well, guess what? We're on Twitter.
We are.
We are absolutely on Twitter. We are established on Twitter. Would you like to know how?
I would. I don't know how to tweet yet.
All right. So if you want to get in touch with us, we are at MCPodcast17. So that's MC, like Musically Challenged, podcast, and the number 17. If you want to send us some love, hate, or even a playlist review, hint, hint, you now have another way to go ahead and get in touch with us.
Excellent. So thank you guys for hanging in with us. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
You have been listening to a program from the Point of Insanity Network. Visit us at poigamestudio.podbean.com for more shows. Follow us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at POI Game Studios.